I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether that's a hike up the mountains, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute pamper session, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. This season, I've teamed up with Sally Hansen. Sally Hansen herself was more than a beauty innovator and businesswoman. She believed in the importance of self-care all the way back in the 1930s. Sally Hansen believes that beauty is better when you do it yourself. So this summer, why not get a salon finish on your nails with Miracle Gel and a perfect flawless tan with the iconic Airbrush Lex Tan. And just like Sally herself, enjoy every self-caring moment of it. This week on the Good Glow podcast, I speak to Trisha's transformation. In 2018, Trisha Lewis says she began to push those who loved her away. She says she felt depressed after reaching 26 stone. She felt like she had hit rock bottom and one day walked into a gym and never looked back. Today, she tells me about how she began to start loving herself again. Her life in 2020 is so different to the one she lived a couple of years ago, and I, like thousands of others, have been so inspired by her journey to find her happiness again. You can't help but fall in love with Trisha. Trisha, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Oh my God, an absolute honour. Thank you so much.
Oh, Trisha, I've been following your journey over the last couple of years, and I first encountered you, as I'm sure many of thousands of people did as well, on The Late Late Show. And you were an absolute ray of positivity. But I was on The Late Late Show myself last October, and it's only now that I realise how nervous you must have been, because I was an absolute wreck backstage waiting to go on. How did you find it?
I kind of found it nearly exhilarating. I suppose I was nervous that I wasn't that nervous, if that makes sense. So I, like, obviously, you know, your tummy is jumping. And but I think the minute I met Ryan, and I think you'll probably agree as well, he's an absolute gentleman. So all my worries kind of went away, because he was like, look, don't worry. Like, this is just an interview. It's just a chat between me and Trish. I'm not going to mock you. I'm not going to make you clickbait. And the minute he said all of that, I was like, ha. So I think once I met Ryan, all the nerves went. But beforehand, there was a bit of like, oh my God, am I on a roller coaster?
I think what's really interesting is that I was reading your book this week, which is brilliant, by the way, and we're going to chat everything about the book. But you had put it out into the universe that you wanted to be on The Late Late Show, and then the message came. So it's almost like you visualized it and then it happened.
Yeah, it was really weird, because I had said to my mum and my aunt that, you know, only like, I kind of said it in a way, kind of just being cocky. I was like, see that couch now, lads? I'll be on that and I'll tell my story. Now, it was only at the very start of my journey, and they laughed and they were like, well, no better woman that will try and get onto it. And it just, when the message came through, I was like, oh my God, this is actually happening, because I made a bucket list and that was part of it. So it was just really surreal. Like, you know yourself how bloody cool it is. I was like, this is the coolest couch I'll ever sit on in my life.
I totally agree about Ryan putting you at ease, and really, he goes out and he meets all his guests before they come out and puts them at ease, and that really, really helps. But you got a standing ovation from the audience that night. What did that feel like?
It was, I kind of didn't know what was happening, because I suppose I was dealing with the sadness that the interview was over, and I was looking at Ryan and I was clapping along, and it was when he said, look what's happening, you deserve this, enjoy it. And I'll just never forget just seeing like all the chairs flapping up and people rising and screaming and shouting, banging their feet. It was just, it was amazing. Now, do I wish that I clapped along? I was like, why, thank you. Instead, I just started absolutely bellowing, they're creating a monster, Ryan. What's happening? You know, and it was just incredible. And like, people were just, as I was getting off, they were like, we'll marry you. And I was like, oh my God, what's happening? But it was amazing. I think that it was an amazing moment. I never expected that.
Yeah. And like I say, I just said earlier, like, you radiate happiness. And that's what I wanted to go back and talk about, because in your book you say 2017 was the worst year of your life, and we all know you now as this happy, bubbly, positive person. But tell us a little bit about what life was like for you before you were in the spotlight.
I suppose from the very start in the book, I explain like childhood. I've had a great childhood. Like I didn't have a story. I didn't have anything horrendous that happened to me. You know, I had mum and dad. I have 8 sisters. We grew up on a dairy farm. Like obviously we weren't the Brady Bunch either. Like we killed each other, but it was great crack. And we were the best of friends. But then like, let's say before Trisha's transformation, I would have been bubbly, I would have been great crack, I would have, you know, always had the laugh. And but I think sometimes it might have been tears of a clown, kind of, you know, I'd make everybody laugh, but I was kind of struggling inside a little bit. But then over the years, I always felt like I'd fix the problem. I would fix the weight problem, and you know, I'd be so skinny, I would go off with somebody in a nightclub, we'd buy a house, we'd get married, and it'd be great crack. But none of that kind of, it kind of went a little bit wrong in me. But then in 2007, I think I finally admitted defeat, and I'd lost everything. I'd lost most of my friends. I'd pushed them all away. You know, my days off, I didn't go anywhere. I stayed in bed or I sat on the couch. I didn't shower. I cried more than I smiled. And I just was battling. I was battling a battle that I thought would never come on my door. And that was depression. And that was from weight. And it was awful because even my mum, like they tried everything. They tried everything, like they weren't complacent and let me away with it, you know. They were good cop, bad cop. And she said her heart broke one evening when she came in and found me crying. I was like, what's wrong with you? And I said, look, I'm not worth anything. What can I do? And that's not the girl I was beforehand, and that's not the girl I am now. So the girl before the Instagram page would have been struggling a lot. And I suppose if you'd have told me back then that I would have this amount of followers and this sitting on a podcast and chatting, I would have assumed you'd have been mocking me.
Wow. And you say there that you had 8 sisters. Like, oh my God, what was that like having 8 sisters? I don't even have 1 sister. I would love to have a sister. Tell me about your relationship with your sisters. Do you believe that they almost saved your life?
Yeah, 100% in a, like, if you want one of them, not a bother. I'll figure out one of them I can get rid of. But they're incredible. Like, and all, none of them have suffered with weight problems. None of them, like, they all work hard. Like, they run, they do exercise. You know, none of them seem to have caught in a cycle. But I remember, and I think if anyone's listening, they do have weight or there is their sibling or friend or someone they love have it. I remember lashing out at them the worst and telling them, you know, that they didn't love me and they, you know, like that I assumed when I'd see them on Instagram, 4 of them in a pub with their hair beautiful and they look fabulous. I'd be like, look at them enjoying life without me. But then I found out afterwards that they would be sitting there drinking and going, what are we going to do? And like the majority of their nights were spent with one of them getting quite upset, saying, I'm really scared and stuff. Like, they did save my life, because at the moment when I thought that they didn't care about me, in fact, they were the ones that were carrying me through it and never, ever taking the foot off the pedal. They were always telling me how much they loved me, how much I'd do it, like sending me diets, you know, saying that, oh, my friend did this. Like, oh, they never, ever stopped trying to help me, which I truly think is amazing, because they were put up against it with a lot of curveballs of me reacting angrily. But thankfully, they knew that that wasn't the Trish that they knew. They were like, look, we're just going to keep pushing and be ready. At the end, they were just ready to catch me when I fell, because they were terrified even at the last few months to say anything, because they were afraid that I would have done something to myself. And that was a legitimate fear, and they should have had it, because in the book I do explain that one night I sadly had to ring the Samaritans, because I didn't know, was I going to come out of this awful feeling of feeling just really ugly and unloved, and you know, that I was worthless, which is a terrible feeling when it's just body fat when I think about it now.
And tell me about that call with the Samaritans. Like, did you find it helpful to do that?
Incredible. And writing that line in the book, I had obviously never told anyone. So before that, I had to send it on to my sisters. And I said, let's look, unfortunately, this is a chapter that I need you to read beforehand. Because, you know, like, it's very hard for them. Like, there's one sister, Maura, who hasn't stopped crying since she read the book. She's like, why didn't you just tell us all of this? I was like, it's very hard to say it because you don't want to address the problem that you think you can't fix. So I remember that night I did Google how to kill yourself. And it's even hard to say it right now. But I remember that number popped up instantly. And I just pressed call, and I remember the exact, the room, the lights were off. I was just sitting there, and all of my friends were down in the bar that I was living over, a bar called Sober Lane. They were all texting me going, Trish, come on down. I was like, no, I'm going home for the weekend. Just complete lies. And I remember being like, I just can't do this anymore. And thankfully, the Samaritans did answer, and they talked me through it. And he had said the words like, I'm not going to tell you not to do it. I'm not going to do any of that, but I just want you to talk to me and know that I'm not going to hang up the phone. And thankfully, he didn't. So about 2 hours of a chat, and by the end, I was like, goodbye and I'll be fine. And he was like, the number's always here. So as an organisation, it's absolutely incredible. It definitely saved my life.
Wow, that is just so brave of you to open up about that in your book. Like you said, you never spoken about it before and never really discussed it. So incredibly brave, and that will help so many people. You obviously hear from so many people who have been inspired by you, and you call them your transformers. Tell us a little bit about, I suppose, that breakthrough moment when you decided that you wanted to transform your life. And I love that word, transform, and I want to ask you all about how you picked it, but just tell us a little bit about kind of what was the first step for you.
I suppose what was nearly the trigger or the kind of moment where I decided that this was enough. I think it's kind of like, for all the world, it was like fight or flight. And I remember in December of 2017, I was the worst Christmas I've ever had. It was awful. And I'm so sad I've left that Christmas go, but I think it needed to happen for rock bottom to hit. My sister Anne-Marie was expecting, and my other sister Maura just had baby boy twins. And whatever had happened with their naps, they had overslept, and Mam was like, look, we'll send you down the dinners so they don't come up like weasels. So basically, so they don't ruin our Christmas, you keep them there until they wake up, okay? So I was like, I'll drop the dinners down. And I took Dad's car, because with 8 sisters, there was loads of cars around the place, and my car had been locked inside the gate. And my sister Annie came with me. And I think she was probably trying to maybe have a chat and hope that, you know, they were always trying to find little moments with me. And I got stuck behind the steering wheel, and I couldn't turn the wheel because it was a different car to mine. And she had to come around at 6 months pregnant and tug me out. And I was like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. And I just said, Annie, will you do me a favour and don't tell any of the girls? And she was like, look, I won't, but I will talk to you soon. But she told all the girls, because she'd gone home crying, and was like, look, it's gone too far. We can't. How are we going to deal with this? So then in January, something random happened. And I just really think that the universe had some power, and I wouldn't be the person that shouts all about that, but I do feel that this was a sign. On a Sunday, like with a large family, obviously you're kind of at home with a few people. So I was at home, and my sister rang me quite distressed. And she said, will you come down and bring me to CUMH, the maternity hospital? There's a small bit of a bleed. And she was crying. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God. So I got straight into care, raced down to her, and we went straight up to Cork. She was crying the whole way up, and I was like, look, you'll be fine, let's say a prayer, we'll be fine. We got in, they checked her straight away, and they said, look, there's a heartbeat, it's all fine, there's nothing wrong, but we will keep you in and we'll get you checked properly once we get you. So that was a Sunday, and I remember being so mad because I'd lost my Sunday night bingo, and I was like, oh, for God's sake, like, can someone swap with me? And that's the only social side of things that I had left. And I remember we went in, obviously I've never had children, but I have loads of nieces and nephews, and we have great crack, and they love me, like I'm the favourite 100%, because they get away with murder, and I'm like, listen, let's have the crack and I'll deal with your mammy afterwards. Like, I don't teach them bad stuff, but we just have crack. And went into the room, and I've never had children and I've never experienced it. And like, the television thing was there for the ultrasound. They put the jelly on her belly, and I remember being like, oh, Annie, this is so exciting. And then the heartbeat, you know how low, I didn't realise how loud it was unless maybe I was hearing it a bit more. And I swear to God, my whole world came crumbling down, because I was like, oh my God, that's one of my little gang. That's one of my nieces and nephews, and they are never going to know who I am. They're either going to know me as obese Trish, who said, or I mightn't be around, or I could be in a home, or is this the example? So I remember I left the room because they had to do the examination, and I was in the waiting room and I was panicking and I was terrified. Someone would ask me when I was due, and it was just awful. And I remember Anne-Marie came directly out to me and she said, I need to talk to you, and I'm so sorry for doing this to you, but this is your fault. And I was like, sorry. And then she was like, I can't eat, I can't sleep, I can't breathe thinking about my new baby when I know my sister's going to go on me. She was like, can I help you? And there and then, that's when we decided that I would change the whole world. So what I did was, that light bulb moment hit, we were both crying, we signed up on an online diet plan there in the CMH, and the lady behind the reception forwarded on, we paid with PayPal. And I blocked Anne-Marie for the next 2 weeks. And I ignored all her texts. I ignored all her calls. And then on February the 5th of 2018, I got a text off her. And I'd lost all my sleep. I couldn't sleep because every time I lay down, I felt like I was going to suffocate with my chest. It was just awful. And she had sent me a text and she said, I'm just asking you one thing. It's the first Monday of February. Is there any way you try? And she made me swear on her bump that I would try. She said, I'm not asking you to lose weight, I'm not asking any of that, but what I'm asking you is for Bump. Bump needs you and I need you. Can you do this? And I texted her back for the first time in my life and I was totally honest and I said, no. I said, I give up, I'm done. The only thing I've ever achieved in this life is to get fatter. I'm turning 30 next month and I have nothing to my name. And that was the moment, Georgie. I got out of bed, I put on my shoes, walked down, walked past mom. I said, I'm going to Cork, I'll talk to you later. And I was at a gym within an hour. And it'll just show you how bad things were for me. Mom said, I went out the door and she rang everyone straight away. And she said, is someone after saying something to her? And they said, no. And I said, mom, what was different? She said, you opened the windows on the way down, pet. And that broke my heart because it must be so hard for mom to see just a crack of air that something was different. So that was it. So wow. I joined the gym and I never ever look back. Every single day I've kept my promise to the bump that I might fail, I might go wrong, but I'll keep trying. So in June 21st, Anne-Marie had a baby boy and I went to see him, and on his little baby grow, she said, open the windows, roasting, take off his jumper, and I took it off. I was bawling when I seen him because, you know, this was what I'd held on to for months, that I knew I was going to meet this person, and I had to kind of show up for him. And Anita said, will you be my godmother? Love, Danny. So he's the little, I love him so much. He's big fake laugh. It kills me. I'm like, look at him.
Wow. And it's so important what you said there about never giving up. So even though you rejected your sisters so many times in their attempts to help you, they kept trying over and over and over again. And that's just so important, isn't it?
Yeah. And I remember I asked a few of my sisters to write something for the book. And I remember Kelly wrote a line and I was like, oh my God. And it said, please don't ever give up. Jump on every single bandwagon they go on, because someday you'll be sitting beside them in the Rolls Royce. And I was like, oh my God, that's it. So they never give up. And like to read, like my sister would wake in the middle of the night and her husband would have to kind of bang her back because she'd be having a panic attack. And she's like, will I just go up and wake her now and talk to her? They were terrified, like, because they could see, like in a weird way, they could see me kind of just killing myself slowly by just not caring about who I was anymore.
Yeah. And that time then of transformation, it wasn't just a physical transformation, it was a mental transformation as well. Tell us then about the first day in the gym and how you felt walking in those doors.
Mortified. And if someone said it to me now, I'd be like, no, don't feel that. You're a hero. Get in that door. Like, I didn't have gym gear that fitted me. I'd went to Debenhams and I picked up a pair of black John Roche pajamas because they had a thick string in it. And I remember I was so ashamed and I was so, you know, I was just like, this is rock bottom. And my wonderful personal trainer was called Emma. And she said afterwards that, you know, when we got friends after a few months, and she was like, Trisha, you were honestly the most depressed client I'd ever sat in front. She said, I didn't think you would turn back up the next day. But I did. And it took me 2 to 3 months to get any bit of enjoyment from the gym. And that's what I want to really hammer home to people, that a 6-week program isn't going to change your life. You need to consistently keep keep turning up. Like, for the first 3 months, I stayed down in a personal training studio. I would only train if my back was to the mirror. I hadn't looked at myself in the mirror in a good 12 months. I just couldn't face it. But slowly but surely, I started to listen to, I suppose, what people were saying to me. And, you know, like, mom would be like, my God, you're like a little squirrel, you're tiny, you know. And they were comparing me to these tiny woodland animals. And eventually I kind of just said, right, am I going to be forever afraid of the mirror, you know? But thankfully I had a personal, like, that's the thing about gyms, there's no one in there that'll judge you. And then one random day I just walked in and I said, that's it, I'm done, let's go up to the main floor. And I thought everyone would be like, oh my God, look at that huge lady, and I'm just terrified of becoming a mem. That's what I was afraid of. But that never happened. And the gym is the safest place you'll ever go into, because it changed my life.
You would think though that, you know, when you think of a gym and you think of all these people like looking at themselves in the mirror while they're working out, that it would be a judgmental place to be. But that is so amazing that your experience was so positive. And I'm sure that will really change the perspective of many people listening who would find the gym so intimidating. When I was in my recovery for cancer, my oncologist sat me down and she told me, Georgie, you have to exercise to supercharge the drugs you're on, to give yourself a better chance in your recovery, to keep cancer away from your life. And I had never exercised before I got cancer. It just wasn't a part of my life. So now when I'm running or I'm exercising, and it took me ages to get there, I feel like so, it's just the most amazing feeling. I feel like I feel calm. I feel in control of my life and I feel happy. So what do you feel like when you're working out? Like, what do you think of? I think of, say, living for my baby, living for my family, giving myself a better chance. What runs through your mind?
Very similar. I feel in control. I feel like, I feel very quickly into the gym journey. I remember turning to my trainer. I was like, will you train me like an athlete instead of a fat person? She was like, yeah, 100%. I was like, I don't want to feel this feeling anymore. So since that, whenever I train, I nearly can feel my muscles growing. I can feel just more in control and more calm. And like, obviously you're out of breath, you're panting, you're roasting, you're like, oh my God, will this end? But I feel calm. And when you said you're doing it for your baby, please God, in the future, this is what I'm doing it for, because for 5 years I lost my periods. Like, they were gone. So I assumed my chances of children were gone. But thankfully, that all worked itself out again and I'm back once a month giving out and moaning about it. But, yeah, you know, I am doing it for my future. I'm doing it for my mother. I'm doing it for everyone. But mainly I'm doing it for me. So when I'm doing it, I just think that exercise, you know, you shouldn't look at it nearly as a weight loss form. It's like a gift. If you can just get the sweat, get the burn, get everything, because you will reap the rewards afterwards.
Yeah. And when your period came back, there's so many similarities in our stories, even though they're so different. But I was on, when I went for chemo, they gave me an injection to shut down my ovaries, to protect them from the chemo. So I didn't get my period and I didn't know if I'd ever get it again. And it's a scary thought. But the day that mine came back, I jumped for joy. I'll never forget it. It was 10 o'clock at night. I jumped into bed with a packet of buttons and I watched the new episode of The Kardashians. And I was like, finally, I'm like craving chocolate. I have a cramp. I just want to watch trash TV. Like, this is a joyous moment. How did you feel when yours came back?
Oh, yours is just so much nicer than my one. Now, I'll be honest, I've never actually told this story, but I, like yourself, like, it's become something you don't think of. And yeah. I was working out in the gym and I'd done a really, really good boxing session. And I went downstairs in Douglas Shopping Centre to a kind of a salad bar called Salad Box. And they had blue turquoise seats, Georgia. So I sat down and I was like, yum, yum, yum. This is unbelievable. And then I stood up and I was like, oh my God. I was like, So my period came back in Douglas Shopping Centre at about 1:30 in the day. And the only person that I could talk to was a male manager. And I was there. I was like, I was texting my sister and she was like, you have two options. You run for it or you deal with it. And she was like, Tricia, this is a good thing. And I was like, Kelly, I'm going to have to run for it. And I had set up the Instagram and I had like 3,000 followers. And I was like, oh, will I do it? Will I not? So eventually I was like, can I talk to you? And your man was like, okay, you can. And I said, but I'm after losing all this weight. I'd lost my... And I kind of blurted it all out. And he goes, relax, 2 seconds. He said, I have 3 daughters. And if they were in the position that you were in, and it's after arriving back, I'd be jumping with joy. He said, I'm going to give you a... So he was like, don't worry about it. So he gave me a roll of blue paper and some sanitizer. So I was there for like an hour scrubbing the seat. But then the kind gentleman that was, sent a bouquet of flowers to my workplace and just said, well done, I'm delighted for you. So it was a wonderful story, but I nearly died. I was like, oh my God,
that man, so amazing for sending you flowers.
What a legend. But it took me a few weeks to go back in, and even when I went in, I was like, oh my God, they're looking at me. Joe was just... but I don't know why I was so embarrassed. Well, like, obviously because it was turquoise suede, I was like, why would you pick these seats? But it was just incredible. At least it was back.
Wow. And when you started sharing your story, and I think you said on the first day you got 400 followers, and then it just started to grow and grow and grow. And I had Jen's journey on my podcast last season, and she said kind of publicly sharing her story really helped to motivate her. Why did you decide to share your story?
Firstly, Jen is a legend. I just think her story is incredible. I love her. What I decided to do was... and it's really... I said it to my sisters that I was going to do it, and I was going to put it up, and they were like, look, I don't think you should. And I remember I sent a video on to my friend Colin in Australia, and it was like of me clean and pressing, and he was like, God, I've been sitting in Brisbane, that's after bringing a tear to my eye, that's amazing, but your runners are fucking disgusting. I was like, thanks a million, Colin. And he was like, would you not just put it up on Instagram or Facebook? And I was like, no way, Colin, I'll wait till it's all done and then I'll do it. And he was like, Tricia, why not? I was like, I don't want people to see how big I've gotten. And he replied, no offense, people know how fat you are, maybe you might be able to help somebody. And I was like, grand. So I decided I would go Instagram, because I suppose I was very nervous that, because on Facebook I knew too many people, and I was like, no, this is too weird. So I'll just do it on Instagram, and then, you know, I'll be documenting away secretly. And then when I've lost all the weight, I'm like, hey, by the way, the whole thing was documented here. And that backfired completely, because everybody from Facebook was over within an hour. I was like, oh God, oh God. So that's why I decided. So when I set that page up, there's, I think, with a lot of weight loss stories, keeping it off is the hardest part. And I wanted somewhere that I could read back, because you know when you lose 4 or 5 stone, you're like, yay, you go on the holidays, you go on the nights out, and slowly you slip back into old habits, and then you're like, right, I've gained 3 stone, I give up. So I wanted to write down the highs, the lows, from exactly my perspective. And then I just found people were like, oh my God, I felt like that too, Trish. I'm like, come forward, you're a transformer, let's go. So that's how it kind of started. It just blew up, I think, just because people were like, oh, this is a very random account, what's you one doing there? And they enjoyed it.
Wow. And people just obviously felt like they connected with you. And was there anything during this time that you missed about your old life, or were you just purely looking forward?
Looking forward. Now, saying that, there was a point, I think, when I was to my sister and I was like, God, look how bad my chin was there, and look at my size of my stomach in that photo. And I was doing like a before and after. And she kind of just turned herself. She goes, will you stop it? She was like, why are you being so mean to that Tricia? She was like, that's the Tricia I love. That's the Tricia that my children love. She was like, and that's the Tricia that Mam loves. She was like, show her a bit more respect, because she's a lot braver than any of us have ever been, because she's the girl that got you to where you are today. So when I go back with respect, and I go back and I throw, you know, some of the love, and I'm like, and I talk like she's a different person, but she really is. But when I the only time I'll go back is to kind of go, all right, girl, still at it, you know, I hope you're okay, because I did treat myself very badly. So, but I kind of try not to dwell in the past, because I think you can pull you down and you're like, well, that person called me this name, and that person just shoulda, woulda, coulda, and move on and kind of look for the future, because that's all we have at the moment. We have the present and the future, please God.
People started following you and sharing their stories with you, and you encountered Jerry Hussey along the way, as I did. And you spoke on your podcast, which is brilliant, The Tricia and Dan Show, about with Jerry Hussey about going to one of his seminars, Soul Sundays, was it?
Yeah.
And how did you... what did you get out of that day?
Oh, I will never forget, because I think I'd heard him on Roz's podcast, Bite Back. And my sister texted me and was like, you need to listen to this guy. She's like, I'm here at my desk and I'm crying and I kind of don't know why. I was like, grand, I'll listen. So I listened to it and I put it up in my story and I was like, class guy, unbelievable podcast. And then he contacted me and he was like, hey, would you like to go to Clare Galway Sunday 2 weeks? I'd love to give yourself and a friend a ticket to come up. So I was like, yeah, cool. Kind of didn't really think anything of it. And then I came to the Sunday and my sister Mr. Kelly came with me and it was pouring rain and we'd slept in. I'd been working till 12:30 the night before in the restaurant, and I remember being allergic up the road. I was like, what am I doing going up here now? And there'll be no one at this, and what is this? And I'm so glad I went up that road. For some reason, I went in, and I remember at the start, you know, everybody had to raise their hands and breathe deeply. Again, like I said, I wouldn't have been into any of that. And I was like grabbing the side of my sister's head, trying to tickle her, laughing. And by the end of the day, we had to do the very same thing. And I was like, Kelly, give me space. And I was like, and release. It, what I found, he just hit home in what he said. When he was saying stuff like, you are enough, you are somebody's number one, you know, and he just, you know, he was able to back up kind of like faith with science. And I just thought it was the most magical day. And when I looked around the room, there was 400 or 500 people there that day. There was every shape, size, gender, age. There was everything. He's just, I find I get a sense of calm and that it's okay to feel what you feel, but let's, you know, nurture the soul. And what I figured out from the main thing I've got to him is someone's soul is much more beautiful than what their waistline is. And that's what I got from him. And I just think he's just incredible.
Yeah, he really is. And like, I went to one of those days and it really opened my eyes to so many things. Like, you have a right to change your mind. You know, choice is the most powerful thing we have. And obviously, over the last 3 months, we've been going through this weird time with COVID-19 and everything has changed for so many of us. How has this time been for you? I found it quite triggering. It brought me back to when I was sick and at home a lot. How did you get on with this?
I struggled really badly. I think like, so I'm the head chef of Jacobs on the Mall in Cork City, and I, on March the 15th was my 13 year anniversary, and it was also the day I got laid off. I was like, this is awkward. So I think, oh my God, but I'll be back. Like, but it was just, you know, everything was just so overwhelming and so scary. I was like, are we all going to die? What's going on? I'm so scared. You know, it was just kind of like, and I found myself watching the news and absorbing in kind of media that I'd never really get involved in. So I found the first 3 weeks I went from absolutely bawling myself to sleeping like, oh my God, how am I going to protect my mam? How am I going to protect my nephew that has a weak chest? What do I do here? To kind of being like, this will be fine. I'm totally grand. Like, this is what the country needed. But now I found a really, really good middle ground, because I've decided that I'm just going to control the controllables. And that's my nutrition, my hand washing, my sleep, my exercise, you know, my social distancing. And do you want, to be honest, this weird time has become wonderful for me. I'm really enjoying my own space. It's the first time in 2 years I've ever worked out without a personal trainer. So I'm doing kind of home workouts and I'm just having really nice time. But I'm also blessed where I am. I'm in the middle of the Geltie Mountains. I'm sure it'd be a bit different if I was in like an apartment block or something. But I've been dealing with it a lot better than I did at the start.
Yeah, and I feel the same way too. And it's interesting what you said there, that you've just been working out by yourself. Has that really, did that give you an increased confidence to know that you could do it by yourself?
Yeah, 100%. So much so that I decided that I was going to become like, do an online course, become a personal trainer. I was like, you know, it just gave me such a, because the first 2 days I was so mad. I was doing like Bulgarian split squats and the chair was all hard and I was like, ugh, this is awful. I'm in a terrible position right now. But then I was like, Hang on now a minute, let's twist it around. Why are you doing Bulgarian split squats when you refuse to do them in the gym? So I was kind of doing exercises that I wasn't enjoying. So what I did was I just sat down and I made a list of things I enjoy doing. And then I just do those every day. And that's what I would love to encourage people. Don't be doing stuff just because this one does it. And what I found was, you know, I was watching all these live workouts on Instagram and I absolutely hate them because I spend more time looking at the person doing it and then I miss a beat and I'm like, ugh, I'm so uncoordinated and I'll never be that girl. So it's just all about figuring out what works for you. And what works for me is to write a list of maybe 7 or 8 exercises, give myself a certain time to get it done in and just get sweating.
That's actually such a good way of doing it, is like do the exercises that you love to do. It's so simple, yet sometimes you just need someone to say it, and that's what an aha moment is.
Yeah.
Tell us about your book. It's absolutely brilliant. Are you so proud?
Oh my God, yesterday I got a phone call from, so I published my book with Gill Books, who have been just incredible, God love them. I'd say they're like, would she just stop missing deadlines? I'd be like, you'll be fine, I'll give it to you next week, I'll have it in, I just have to run a busy restaurant right now. So writing a book around Christmas time was a really bad idea as a chef, but it was fine. It's amazing, it went into number one in Ireland yesterday. So all of the, like, even having a book alone is just the most proud moment I've ever had, to be number one in Ireland. Oh my God. But it's just, I don't know, I just, it's really cool. It's exactly what I wanted it to be. And I'm so glad I was allowed to write it that way.
Yeah, it's a beautiful book, and it's not just your story. So there's gorgeous recipes in it that look really tasty and are not, it's not like horrible diet food. It's like lovely meals, but healthy at the same time.
100%, because I remember I said at the start of the journey that I was going to lose weight, but I was never going to lose flavour, because ironically, I don't really like processed foods. I don't like chipper food or anything like that. My problem actually is portion control. It's having like a spud, but I might have 5 of them. It's the appetite that I have is my problem. So when I was making the book, I said, look, I want to do it in a way that all of the ingredients are inside in people's cupboards, because even as a chef, like, a cookbook to me is like a manuscript to a musician. I love it. I love how complicated they can be. I love figuring them out. But not everybody wants to be searching for unicorn dust in Tesco. Do you know, it just doesn't work out at home. So I wanted to make sure that all the recipes kind of overlapped in the ingredients, plus they were in people's pantry anyway. And it was just incredible. Like, even Gil sometimes were like, are you sure there's no more in that? I was like, nope, print it. That's exactly the recipe, because you can do some simply beautifully food with 5 or 6 ingredients. All you need to make sure is that the flavours match and they complement each other, and you don't need to be adding 100 things.
Yeah, there's like homemade pizza, southern fried chicken, pesto and cherry tomato pasta. Do you have a favourite recipe in here?
I'm kind of torn between two. So I love the chicken and tarragon broth, because it's like this like wholesome stew thing that you'd get when you come in from school on a cold day. And I love the turkey yoksung. It's like, oh, it's so good. And it's so simple to do, and it would just save you so much money on takeaway Chinese. It really will.
What did you feel like when you held your book in your hands for the first time?
Oh my God. Well, it was just before I had to sign all the copies. So when I seen the mountain of them, I was like, oh my holy fuck, do I have to sign all these? But it was so weird. I nearly started to cry, because I was like, oh my God, this is like, you know, you know, people have weddings and their babies and everything. I've never had to celebrate any huge moment like that, because I wouldn't have had a 30th because I was too conscious. So this felt like my wedding. I was like, look at you. Aww. You know, it was like it's the biggest moment of my life. I was just so proud of it. And to see, it's surreal. You couldn't really describe what I felt like, but I felt like it was a newborn baby, to be honest.
What would you say your proudest moment to date has been then?
Oh God, I think when I did the mini marathon around Cork City, that was surreal. Like, you know, I had to stand in front of 7,000 people, heavier than most of them. And I was like, right, let's get this done. I'm the brand ambassador for it. And I led, like, to lead all those people around the city and then to cross the finish line. And my mother and my godchildren were standing there. And that moment was insane. I suppose I became the brand ambassador for Aldi, something I've always believed in, the Late Late Show, the book. But the kind of nearly the proudest moment is to look at Mam every single day and see her not stressed. She's like a young woman. She's like, every day, she's like, I have no worries anymore. I have nothing to worry about anymore because all my girls are fine. Because, you know, I could see it in her. I could see the strain it was taking on her. So I think that's every morning when I meet Mam, that would be a moment that I kind of go, right, let's make the decision today. Do I want to be fat or fit, happy or sad, healthy or dying? And I just go from there.
So inspiring. I have to ask you this question last.
Oh no, are we at the end? This is lovely. I know,
it was absolutely beautiful and so inspiring. I want to know, I know that you had that really bad Christmas and you were so sad. What was last Christmas like for you?
Oh my God, it was the best crack ever. Like, so I've had two Christmases since that Christmas, and it's the first two Christmases that I honestly do not care what's under the tree. I just don't, like, we spent even with the last two Christmases just having fun, crack. It felt like old times again. No one was stressed. I was in a dress. Everybody was in dresses. You know, my hair was blow dried, and it's just, it was exactly what Christmas should feel like. It was happy. And I'm so grateful that I have it back, because all our lives we had great Christmases. So in 2017, I was like, oh my God, what is this? This is just so annoying. But it was just amazing. And like, you know, every, like, Mam would have came down last Christmas and was like, I don't need anything. My Trishy's back. I'm like, I am, girl. Get out the Prosecco.
Oh my God. I think the next time you go on The Late Late, you'll have to bring them all with you onto the stage.
Oh,
because
God.
Because it's all of these amazing family members and your sisters and your mum, and they just carried you through it and helped you get to this point. And like, your positivity is infectious, and you, I feel like, I don't really like the saying live your best life, but it's, you are truly living a great life now.
I really am. And they're amazing, like, because they're great. They'll keep you in check as well. They're like, don't be turning into one of those bloggers now. And I'm like, sorry. And they're like, if we catch you with too many swipe ups, they're going to call me out on it. So, you know, they're very normal. They're very hardworking women, and they all live their best lives. And I think that'll be my, like, I think, like, a few of them are camera shy. There's another few of them that are like, put me on your Instagram, will you? I'm like, okay. Do you know, I just think that it's just a normal family that, unfortunately, someone became obese in it, and it's come full circle. So if anybody is stressed, just look at the people around you. Someone does adore you and wants the best for you, and listen to that person.
And what do you say then when people reach out to you on Instagram or through email and say that they want to change but they don't know how to?
Oh, it's so hard, because sometimes the only thing about the Instagram growing, and I adore it, and I'd never go, I want less followers. I miss being able to catch every single message. I miss being able to, because like, there's only one of me, but there's might be 117,000 coming at me, and I try, like, I'll spend about 3 hours per day going through messages and trying to get back to as many people. But the main thing I would say to them is, you know, you'd get the question, can I eat bread? Can I do this? Like, the main thing I would say is, forget about the food part of it. You're going to have to deal with what the problem is, and that problem is you. You know, you can blame all you want, but you know, what's wrong? What's making you eat for comfort? What's making you be bored? What's making you be lonely? How can you fix that? And I would definitely, what I always say to them is, they have to take ownership for their journey, because it'll never work. And the main point that I have to somebody is, stop looking at the destination. Stop saying, right, when I have 4 stone off me, I'll be happy. Be happy now, because if you do not enjoy the journey, you'll never keep it off. It'll just be the same roller coaster of weight loss you'll always be on. And don't look for a quick fix. This isn't a quick fix. I'm 2 years at it. I'm still 18.5 stone, slowly coming down off me. But just always make sure you have a goal, and to create tiny goals, so that eventually, like, once you, like, fight all the small battles, you'll win the war. So just make sure you've got a goal, but never adjust that goal. Adjust the time frame. So if you say, I want to lose weight by Christmas, and it hasn't happened, that's no problem. Keep your goal. Now just adjust the time frame. Push it out to March. Push it out to June. And just stop giving up on yourself, because, you know, you're wonderful. You're beautiful. You might be upset listening to this, because I find sometimes when before listening to weight loss things, it used to upset me. If it is to be, it is up to me. And you have the power to do it.
Wow. Thank you so much for your time. I hope we get to meet each other soon. I'm in my bedroom, you're in Limerick, and hopefully our paths will cross very soon and maybe we can go for a run together or something.
I'd love it.
But enjoy this time, enjoy the success of the book. You deserve every single second of it.
No better. And I just want to say, you, and I know it's probably, oh, look at us all loving each other, but I just think you're an absolute inspiration. The way even that you portray yourself on social media, the battle you've overcome, your gorgeous little girl, it is just all lovely. You can see you've had your troubles, but again, you just put the bright side out. Let's get it done. I just think you're exactly what Instagram needs every single day. And I just want to say thank you for this podcast as well, because I've listened to it a couple of times and every single time I've got something from it and I'm like, oh my God, I feel like you get to know your guests, which is what I love.
Oh, thank you so much, Tricia.
Not a matter. And beat the bulge.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast, with thanks to Sally Hansen. As we all find ourselves washing our hands so much more these days, why not take better care of our nails with Sally Hansen's Cuticle Oil or Complete Care 7-in-1. You can shop the products at grocery stores and pharmacies nationwide, such as Dunn Stores and Macaulay's Health and Beauty, and online too. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. And for more on my story, follow me on Instagram, georgie.com.